What is the time course and what can we expect to see?
It showed a 50% mortality. So this is like very bad.
I think many of us probably don't even have on our radar.
Super important to know what exactly they're taking.
Greetings, everyone, and welcome back to Critical Care Perspectives in Emergency Medicine. Mike Winters here from the University of Maryland School of Medicine in Baltimore, Maryland. Hope all of you are doing well. This is going to be our second podcast here in 2020, getting started here in January. And I am so happy to welcome a dear colleague, trusted friend, and an amazing physician to the podcast as a special episode here. And that is none other than Dr. Sarah Dubbs to talk about a very important and emerging topic in many of our patients, specifically our oncology patients that we are seeing day in and day out in emergency departments across the country. But before diving into our education topic this week, Sarah, welcome to the podcast and perhaps tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, Mike, thank you so much for having me on the podcast. It's really an honor to be here, and your introduction was way, way, way too kind. So I am one of the assistant professors at University of Maryland, and I am an assistant program director, and my clinical niche is oncologic emergencies. I've really found this to be super fascinating, and these are always our nicest patients. So it's a joy to take care of them when they come to the emergency department, and this area of medicine is just moving at light speed with new developments in treatment and management. We're definitely seeing lots of cancer patients all over, no matter where you work. Whether you work in a big oncology center or a standalone ED, these patients are everywhere. So all of us need to be prepared for them when they come in.
Completely agree. Now, one other thing to that. So Sarah is one of our assistant residency directors. She's heavily involved in resident education, but I would dare say probably her biggest accomplishment and what she may be most proud of is her two beautiful girls.
Thank you.
Just finished running the Disney half marathon with her husband, Matt. How did that go?
It was hard. It was really fun though. I definitely recommend it, but I'm also a Disney nerd, just like Mike is. I don't know if he's outed that yet, but sorry to out you on the podcast there. But we had a lot of fun. We love going there, and it's a nice break from the real world.
Yes, I am that. We love taking our kids there as well, and I'm looking forward to signing up for an upcoming Disney race. Well, let's get on to the education this month, and you have really made a name for yourself in terms of this. I know that you do a tremendous amount from teaching education, but really developing an area of expertise in the care of our oncology patients. And what got us talking about doing a podcast together is there's a recent article in Critical Care Medicine on the toxicities associated with a lot of these newer immunotherapies and targeted agents. And because we are starting to see this more and more, we are thinking about differentials that include the actual disease states itself, but it is exceedingly important that we consider perhaps this actually may be a medication toxicity and not necessarily a specific disease entity related to the cancer itself. So I think this is going to be hugely beneficial for all of us, and I'm really looking forward to the pearls and the pitfalls that we'll go through over the course of this podcast. So with that, Sarah, give us some background. Why is it important that we're talking about this topic?
Absolutely, Mike. So these patients, again, can kind of fly under the radar because they are on medications and they are on quote unquote anti-cancer medications. However, it might not be readily apparent to us that they are on these new type of medications. And these patients are educated to tell us that they're on new medications, but I've literally had patients come in and say, yeah, I'm on chemotherapy, blah, 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 but they're not on the traditional type of chemotherapy that we think of. And the entire differential is different. When they're presenting to you critically ill, it does affect management. And there are things that we in the emergency department, as well as in the ICU, can do differently to give them a better outcome.
Outstanding. Well, let me ask about a little bit of terminology, because often when we're taking a history of present illness, patients will talk about they're receiving chemotherapy. And that may be true for the most part. But the terminology, I think, would be helpful to just briefly review between chemotherapy and what we're talking about with respect to what's referred to as targeted therapy and then perhaps immunotherapy. What's the difference between those three?
Yeah, this is a big deal, right? So when you go in and take the history from the patient or you're looking through the records and looking at all these medications and oncologic history for them, it's super important to know what exactly they're taking. The field is really evolving so quickly that the terminology even is shifting. So depending on where you look, there might be a little bit of overlap here and there, but I'll do my best and go ahead and explain the differences between these. So we're familiar with traditional cytotoxic chemotherapy being the medication that patients get to treat their cancers. However, targeted therapies are a class of agents that were developed against specific molecular targets that affect cancer growth and survival. So examples of this are tyrosine kinase inhibitors, monoclonal antibodies like imatinib and dasatinib. So those are one class of targeted therapies. And then there's this whole big class of new therapies called immunotherapies. You can also hear them referred to as immuno-oncology therapies. And these drugs stimulate the immune system and engage it against the cancer. So their mechanism is very different than traditional cytotoxic chemotherapy and even targeted therapies. So examples of these are immune checkpoint inhibitors. This is a really big class. And
you have probably seen many of these medications advertised on television.
Some of the generic names are ipilimumab, pembrolizumab, durvalumab. So those are very, very common, and patients are coming in that are on those medications. Then we have immune effector cell therapy, and this involves chimeric antigen receptor therapy, or CAR therapy, and then T cell receptors, which is TCR therapy. And then you have cancer vaccines, which are a whole nother type of immuno-oncology therapy.
So I think that's helpful to kind of set the stage as we talk about the toxicities and the various organ systems that can be involved and affected secondary to these medications. So just to go back over those once again, in terms of targeted therapy, those are the tyrosine kinase inhibitors or the monoclonal antibodies versus the immunotherapy, which are classified largely immune checkpoint inhibitors versus immune effector cell therapy. So very, very helpful. Well, with the administration of these medications, are there any type of reactions that we might be seeing patients brought right to the ED, say from infusion centers, our associated cancer centers at our various institutions?
Absolutely. So monoclonal antibodies cause mast cell degranulation and activate the immune system specifically and immediately. And so these can cause these immediate hypersensitivity type reactions. So patients may have anything from a true anaphylaxis to a milder anaphylactoid type of reaction. And they may try to start treating it in the infusion center, but if it's severe, they'll take those patients down to the ED. We'll treat them just like we do any other anaphylaxis with epinephrine, with fluids, etc. So the good thing is, we treat these similarly to other presentations, but kind of knowing that these things can happen, especially the monoclonal antibodies, is helpful to us.
Outstanding. Now, in terms of clinical presentations, patients receive one of these agents. What is the time course and what can we expect to see? What's that initial presentation that we need to be on the lookout for?
With the infusion reactions, it's pretty much immediate, either during their infusion or within the first hour or two. If it's beyond that, you might be looking at something else. So again, with the monoclonal antibodies, you can get cytokine release syndrome. It's more associated with the IECs that we talked about earlier, and we'll go into it a little bit more in a second. But if it's within the first hour or two, it's probably more of an anaphylaxis or anaphylactoid reaction.
All right. Well, you mentioned cytokine release syndrome or cytokine storm. What is that?
This is bad news bears. Cytokine release syndrome is really bad. So as I mentioned, it can be associated with monoclonal antibodies. However, it's more written about in the literature and more spoken about with IECs or CAR T therapy and TCRs. So this syndrome occurs usually within the first week or two after T-cell infusion. And kind of just to go back to talk about generally what immune effector cell therapy is, basically you're giving patients genetically engineered T-cells that are infused into their body, and that obviously causes an immune response. And that immune response causes a very sepsis-like picture where they develop fever, hypotension, they get capillary leak. So they look very, very ill. And there really is not a great way to differentiate this between sepsis. So that's one of the key points here, is that patients will look septic and we do need to still work them up for infection and sepsis with this. However, when it's during the time period after this T-cell infusion, it's most likely to be cytokine release syndrome.
I think that is incredibly important and something to add to the differential that I think many of us probably don't even have on our radar. Would you say
this? Yeah, definitely. And we're so used to like sepsis alerts, all that. And it's not a bad thing if you treat this patient as sepsis, but it is important to recognize that it could be a cytokine release syndrome because there are medications that can be given and therapies that can be given against that specifically. The other thing that can happen with it is an ARDS picture. So patients can get very hypoxemic and have respiratory failure.
So you mentioned that there may be some specific medications that could be used for this cytokine storm. What are those?
So because interleukin 6 plays a big role in the process of the entire cytokine release pathway, an anti-interleukin 6 medication will be what we use to treat this. And again, this
definitely has to be a treatment decision made in conjunction with oncology,
with pharmacy helping out and all of that. But the approved anti-IL-6 therapies that are out there are tocilizumab, and then more recently, ziltuximab.
And I'm not going to try to repeat any of the medication. For all of you that are listening, in terms of just the acronyms that we're using and the names of medications, this will be included in the handout for this episode. So go ahead and continue, Sarah.
Absolutely. And just to also kind of explain in terms of giving people an idea of how prevalent CRS is, or cytokine release syndrome, is in patients that get T-cell therapy.
It's almost ubiquitous. For example, patients who receive CAR therapy, where Mike and I work at University of Maryland,
who are getting CAR therapy, are actually observed in the MICU, in the ICU, for development of this because they just expect it to happen. And in some ways, that's kind of like, we want it to happen because that shows that their therapy is working. So in terms of when to trigger that tocilizumab or IL-6 therapy, grading of the CRS symptoms is really important.
All right. Outstanding. So that's general things about these therapies with respect to cytokine storm. Can present like a sepsis-like picture, so needs to be on the differential. Let's go through a few of the specific organ toxicities relating to these medications. There's a handful of organ systems that are preferentially affected versus others. So let's go through a few things. And we've already alluded to ARDS type picture. So what are the pulmonary toxicities or clinical presentations we might see from these medications?
The big one here is pneumonitis. And pneumonitis is usually associated with the immune checkpoint inhibitor therapies. And this can range from very mild to almost asymptomatic pneumonitis to severe grade 4 reactions where patients are in respiratory failure and hypoxemic and may require intubation or mechanical ventilation. With these patients, unfortunately, there's no pathognomonic radiographic pattern that has been described with it, but you have to go off of the patient's symptoms, any type of radiographic abnormality showing inflammation within the lungs, and that's on x-ray or CT. And if you're suspicious, again, the gold standard is to do a biopsy. However, we generally don't go that far because it's such an invasive procedure. So generally, you're basing your treatment decisions on the patient's symptoms and presentation.
All right, so that's the big one, pneumonitis. Any other pulmonary complications or toxicities before we move on to the next organ system?
The tyrosine kinase inhibitors and anti-VEGF antibody type of treatments do put patients at a little bit higher risk of thromboembolic complications, so PEs and things like that. So on top of just being a cancer patient in general, they have a little bit of increased risk for pulmonary embolism. And then pulmonary hypertension can occur with the TKIs, although this is usually only during treatment and tends to go away after they complete their treatment.
All right, so we're painting a picture here of a cancer patient who's come into the ED. They may look and often do look critically ill. We're starting to think because of their immunosuppression, they're at overwhelming risk of infection. But in that first 1 to 2 weeks, thinking about cytokine storm, fever, hypotension, hypoxemia in the patient who's coming in after receiving one of these medications. And there's no way to remember the medications themselves, but now that you can see the name and look them up and think generically, are they an immunotherapy or targeted therapy? We're thinking pulmonary symptoms, could be pulmonary toxicity or a pneumonitis from this medication. What's another organ system that's commonly affected or may be affected by these medications, and what's that clinical presentation?
So neuroside effects are big with all types of these new immunotherapies and the immune effector cell therapies. Another big one in terms of additional to CRS with CAR T therapy and TCR therapy is immune effector cell associated neurotoxicity syndrome. And this nomenclature also is continuing to evolve. So it occurs in, again, a majority of patients receiving CAR therapy, 70 to 80%, and 30 to 40% of these cases are severe in terms of symptoms like global aphasia, seizures, coma, paresis, cerebral edema, and it can be deadly. So mortality can be very high with this.
All right. Any specific treatment with respect to ICANS or simply supportive?
So again, with a lot of these therapies, treatment is recommended based on their grade and severity. So there is a scoring system that's recommended to assess how severe the patient's reaction is, and then that will inform you of whether or not to start treatment. So treatment options do include the anti-IL-6 medications as well as steroids, but again, depends on the grade and depends on your conversation with the primary oncologist.
All right, well, let's move on. So we've got pulmonary toxicity, neurotoxicity. In general chemotherapy, it seems that there's often perhaps a cardiac component or involvement to that. Do we see cardiac toxicity in the setting of these newer medications?
Cardiac toxicity is a huge one with this.
Steroids are the cornerstone of treatment for neurotoxicity. Tocilizumab can be given if the patient currently has CRS, but it has not shown to be helpful with isolated neurotoxicity. One important thing I want to let our listeners understand and know is that in a patient who has neurotoxicity or suspected neurotoxicity from CAR T therapy, if they're really altered, make sure that you get an EEG to rule out subclinical status, because that can be certainly a contributing factor.
So you can get stent thrombosis and something called Kunis syndrome. Do you know what that is, Mike?
I do, from an allergic and anaphylaxis.
Yeah,
cardiac toxicity or cardiac effects in the setting of an acute allergic reaction. Secondary, at least in the anaphylaxis literature, it's talked about the fast that there's such a concentration of mast cells around the coronary arteries that that's what's thought to precipitate Kunis syndrome.
Yeah, and so exactly from the same mechanism, patients getting the monoclonal antibodies, like we talked about how they can get the hypersensitivity reactions during their infusion, this can be part of that syndrome where mast cells are activated and then they can look like they're having a STEMI or they can have an actual thrombosis that's allergy mediated.
So that's the monoclonal antibodies. What about the other immunotherapy medicines?
Yes, so immune checkpoint inhibitor-related cardiac toxicity is a huge hot topic right now. So there's a lot of literature coming out about myocarditis related to ICIs. Reportedly, so far, incidence has been low, but I think that, and the literature is reflecting that, the incidence is underreported. Even though the incidence may be underreported or low at this point, it's very severe and has a high mortality. There was one retrospective observational study done by Salem, published in Lancet Oncology 2018, that showed a 50% mortality. So this is like very bad. And if patients are presenting, say, to the emergency department with some symptoms and you catch it early, this may make a huge difference in terms of their outcomes. So it's somewhere where we really can make a difference in the overall mortality, I think. In terms of other cardiac toxicities, cardiomyopathies, pericarditis, and other pericardial effusions, as well as dysrhythmias are associated with ICIs, but myocarditis is definitely the big one.
All right. So could there be yet any other organ systems that are involved or develop toxicities from these medications?
Absolutely. There are lots, and we can't be overall comprehensive in this short podcast, but hopefully it's a good introduction to people who are listening. Nephrotoxicity is a big one. So immune checkpoint inhibitors may be associated with AKIs as well as almost any other medicine on the planet.
And TKIs have similar effects with nephritis and thrombotic microangiopathies that lead to kidney injury.
All right, well, we're coming down the home stretch here. Are there any other things we should think about or consider in terms of these medications before we bring it home and have you give us your take-home points?
Definitely. So don't forget about endocrinopathies. These can cause pretty severe hyper and hypothyroidism, hyperglycemia, or even DKA, and then hypophysitis and adrenalitis. So patients may present in adrenal crisis who are on these medications. So don't forget to keep that on your differential as well in a patient who's presenting with persistent hypotension, et cetera. And this wasn't mentioned in the article itself, but colitis is a really common adverse reaction experience in patients with immune checkpoint inhibitor therapy. It doesn't usually cause really critical illness, but patients can get significantly dehydrated, be very symptomatic, feel weak, have electrolyte abnormalities. So keep that on the differential as well and think about that in patients presenting with severe diarrhea. Again, you're going to work them up for C. diff and infectious causes, but again, think about that as a player in this situation. Another thing to consider is underlying immune disorders being uncovered or exacerbated by immune checkpoint inhibitor therapy. So someone with underlying lupus or another autoimmune disease can actually have a precipitation of their disease and present critically ill when undergoing this kind of therapy. And then finally, again, we've talked about how these targeted therapies and immunotherapies are different than traditional chemotherapy. And with traditional chemotherapy, we're thinking infection, immunosuppression, et cetera. This still comes into play, unfortunately. The picture is not always super clear, and you have to still consider it. Opportunistic infections have definitely been reported in patients on these therapies. And then the use of steroids for treatment of adverse events in these patients also still puts them at higher risk. So you might have a patient come into the ED who has mild adverse reactions and is being treated with prednisone as an outpatient, and you may not realize that, but it does put them at higher risk for opportunistic infections.
Well, Sarah, this has been a hugely helpful podcast. There are so many toxicities with these newer medications, and it seems just like a new medication is coming out every few weeks or every few months that there's no way for us to necessarily remember all of these specific medication names, but these classes of medications and then their toxicities and how they manifest in patients coming in to the ED, I think are important points to remember. Now, in terms of all of the things we've just discussed, you've put it together in a really nice handout that summarizes everything that we've talked about during this podcast. So I'd refer everyone to the handout just for a nice review, as well as a citation with the specific article that we referenced at the beginning of the podcast. But as we end here, what are your big take-home points, teaching points for all of our listeners?
Thanks, Mike. Yeah, my big take-home points are to remember that toxicity of targeted therapies and immunotherapy are super wide-ranging. They can affect any organ, and they can cause critical illness. These symptoms and signs are very nonspecific and can often mimic other life-threatening etiologies, so you still have to think about all those things in parallel. And then treatment strategies are based on the grade of toxicity. We have to keep in mind that the immunosuppression to treat the toxicities has to be weighed against the loss of the anti-tumor effects of the treatment. So when you're trying to or thinking about reversing their immune therapy, obviously you're putting them at a setback with their cancer therapy. So it's super important to have this approach hand in hand with the patient's primary oncologist, if they're critically ill with the ICU team, and all the other subspecialists that are involved. And we didn't go too much into specifics of treatment, but remember that treatment decisions are based on the grade of the toxicity with the patient. There are lots of different recommendations and published guidelines on toxicity, and lots of big cancer centers have their own guidelines or have adopted certain guidelines from large organizations. But when you're deciding to put a patient on treatment, it is actually pulling back on their treatment overall of their cancer. So that immunosuppression to treat the toxicity needs to be weighed against the loss of anti-tumor effects of the treatment. And that's where it's super important to have this multidisciplinary hand-in-hand relationship with the patient's primary oncologist, the intensivist if they're critically ill, and any other subspecialists that are involved in the patient's care as well.
Yeah, I'd completely agree. I think probably for me, one of the bigger take-home points, or perhaps the biggest take-home point, is these things are new. medications are coming on market in this immunotherapy, targeted therapy, we're not going to be able to keep up with every new medication. And subsequently, the treatment is evolving for these toxicities. I think the biggest thing is to really understand and appreciate that disease presentations or clinical presentations may very well be one of these medication toxicities, whether it be pulmonary, neurotoxicity, cardiac involvement, renal involvement. It very well may be one of these medications. And to keep that in the differential and then connecting with the patient specialist, whether that be an oncologist or whether that be also an intensivist if they're headed to the ICU, are critical. So I think this has been enormously helpful, Sarah. I can't thank you enough for joining us here on CCPEM. For those of you, and I'm sure there will be many questions related to this discussion and much anxiety created from this discussion, please shoot us an email through the website and I'll fire that over to Sarah for her expert thoughts on your question. So my thanks to Sarah once again. My thanks to listening here on this podcast here on CCPEM. That'll bring it to a close for this discussion on toxicities of targeted agents and immunotherapies for cancer. Looking forward to talking to you next time on CCPEM. This is Mike Winters once again from the University of Maryland School of Medicine in Baltimore, Maryland. We will talk to you on our next podcast. Bye for now.